Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by my very, very close friends at Convertible Solutions. Convertible Solutions has recently come out with a brand new product called Diamond Print Glitter, the world's first full line of printable glitter paper and film that can be used for a wide range of printing and converting projects. Diamond Print Glitter offers striking visual appearance and textural surface and will dazzle and delight as packaging, bags, envelopes, tags, labels, signage, displays, and much, much more. Listen, I've had the Diamond Glitter paper, the Diamond Print Glitter paper in Canvas, and it's cool. It's just cool. Your clients, designers, agencies are going to go nuts over it. So you need to get to convertiblesolutions.com and check out this new Diamond Print Glitter. Ask them for a sample. Call them today. It's the coolest stuff. Call them at 866-832-0217. Again, that's Convertible Solutions at 866-832-0217. Guys, today's episode is a fun one. We talk about sales, shockingly enough. And I've got an old friend named Bill Blair. Bill has had some really, really cool leadership assignments in his career. He's worked in the printing industry. He's worked at Athens Paper, where he was running that distribution company. He has done some consulting. He's worked for multiple printing organizations and been in all kinds of leadership roles and sales roles. And so the cool thing is that Bill has decided to go off and do the consulting side of things and has hooked up with the Harrison Group. And some of you are familiar that Harrison has been doing this for, gosh, I don't know, 50 years. And they've been tapped into what makes salespeople tick, how to find the best salespeople, how to find the fit, and how to create a better engagement with the company. So Bill has a really, really wonderful perspective because he's seen this from both sides. And my conversation with him was one that could have gone on forever because this is near and dear to our heart. This is not just about how you sell or what the challenges are. This is about how an organization connects with its marketplace and how we find the new level of salesperson. So without further ado, I would love for you to give a listen to my conversation with Bill Blair. Enjoy. Bill.
Mark.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm really happy you called and the weather, how's the weather down there?
You know, it's been raining so much that, we're in the mountains, but I don't worry too much, but the other day the animals started lining up two by two in my backyard, so I got a little nervous, but it's been terrible rain. How about in Pennsylvania?
It's, a lot of snow. I've been flying around. I've been traveling. So, In fact, I was just got back from Florida and, was at a really neat Canon event and I got to escape it, but now I'm back in it. But it's not bad. I mean, you can't really complain this year across the country. Other than that really cold Arctic front that you and I talked about, other than that, I mean, it's been pretty mild, knock on wood. So,
And down here, you've lived down here. Usually we don't have our winter until March for some reason. If we're going to get hammered, it's going to be at least with snow and ice, it's going to be in March. So, we're all knocking on wood about missing that.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. So, So what's going on? Tell me. So I, you know, want to talk a little bit about say obviously a lot of it about sales and what you're seeing, and I want to hear, you know, a little bit about what you're doing. You've obviously got a great history in the business, both on the print and the paper distribution side, and you know, you've seen it from, you know, the sales side, you've seen it from the managerial side. You now are doing some consulting. So before I jump into that, because I really want to get your take on, you know, what's keeping people up at night around sales. Give us a little of the 411 on you.
Well, okay, thanks. Well, I spent my career, got involved in the printing and graphics industry when I was a kid, actually, before high school. The teacher hooked me, and have been in some form or fashion in the graphic communications industry ever since, and including a series of leadership roles at a variety of companies. And when I look back, my top three problems at every place I've ever been have been surrounding people. And that's typically how to attract, develop, and retain the top people I can find. And so, you know, had a variety of ways of working through that, but found a tool about 12 years ago called the Harrison Assessment that I've been using ever since to help me, and it uses data and some predictive analytics to after a 30-minute assessment to help with these things using data. And so was at a crossroads in my career last year. It made sense to take a left turn and go do my own thing. And so with the Harrison tool and some other things, I'm helping my clients with those same three things: how to attract, develop, and retain their top people. And a lot of my clients are in the printing and graphics industry. Some aren't, and it won't surprise anybody to know that the problems are really the same. We tend to focus on printing and graphics in related industries, but others are having exactly the same challenges. And so I really enjoy helping people through that, coaching them. It's also involves leadership development, succession planning, and some of those things as well that go along with the people side of the business.
How, what do you think has changed? I mean, what have you seen? I mean, I think it's like I said, you know, you and I are similar. We've seen it from a variety of perspectives. But over the last 10, 20 years, when you think about sales and engagement with the marketplace, what do you see as some of the most dramatic changes over that time?
Well, from a high level, I think, and if we go, you know, most recent, I think the decision makers are harder to reach than they've ever been in the past. And we can, you know, discuss why that is. I think, you know, marketing departments, if we pick them from a printing sales standpoint, marketing departments have been slashed in the last recession, and those folks are doing twice as much work with half as many people. And so they're harder. They have a lot more things pulling at them. They're harder to get to. I think clients and prospects are more educated than they were in the past, because of what's available on the internet. So in a lot of cases, they've already done their research about the product or service that we're trying to sell, and they're well educated before they ever engage a salesperson. And then if I'm just picking three, I think clients are more demanding than in the past, and people will have some debate about that, I'm sure. But with the availability 24/7 of the internet, we've all been conditioned to get answers immediately. And so I think that adds pressure to the sales process. In a lot of cases, you know, we've always talked about first one in wins, but I think that's more true today than ever before.
That's pretty astute. I mean, and that's great insight. And I think we sometimes, gloss over that kind of stuff, right? We I think that is dead nuts on, and I think people will all acknowledge that, but we're not embracing that. Decision makers are definitely harder to get to. Clients are clearly more educated, so they're going through that self-discovery, and you're getting to them when they've already decided that we want to change, and maybe even decided what they're going to choose. And three, like you said, collectively we are more demanding. We want answers now, and it's immediate gratification. It's even the way we kind of digest content is I watched this episode, now I want to watch the next episode. So that's fascinating. Exactly. And so, as you work with clients, as you've seen this evolve, I think that is as clear as it's been put to me, those three bullets. I still believe, Bill, that people are acknowledging that. I'm not sure that they're addressing it. Are they?
You know, I think in certain ways, and I'm thinking of one of my clients who comes at the marketing and sales, comes at his customers in a multitude of directions. Mm-hmm. And when it used to be a salesperson knocking on the door, only was all he brought to market. Now it's outbound calls, it's direct mail, it's all these different channels. It's a social media presence. And then when his salesperson finally does get an audience, I think they have to bring greater value. And by that I mean a certain amount is available to the buyer out there that they can educate themselves, but maybe not everything. And so the salesperson, when they do get that audience, they have to bring a higher value than maybe they did in the past. Mm-hmm. And those guys win, I think. I think also when we look at it from a sales perspective, I think when we talk about the immediacy, follow-up's always been and follow-through has always been important, but immediate follow-up and follow-through maybe even more important today. Mm-hmm. You know, my father was a salesperson. He's in his 80s now. And so when I talked to him about how, and if you think about back in the 70s when he was selling, you know, you called the office, you got your messages, you called back. And if you called them back in eight hours or even the next day, that was fine. And when I tell my father that there are cases when if you're not back to the client in 10 minutes, you lose the order, his head starts spinning around. You know, he can't get his head around that. But, you know, that immediate need for information, you better figure out a way, whether it's, you know, using technology, whether it's being available. You have multiple ways to communicate now, of course, not just phone, but text and others. So figuring out that way that works for your clients is also something that salespeople have to embrace. And so are people doing it widely? I see pockets of it. I think we all can improve.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think that those are things you can work on, right? I mean, those are things, you know, you can respond quickly and you can put together teams or companies can build on programs that can respond quickly. And that might take the demanding piece. They're certainly more educated and, you know, taking that piece. I feel like that's where these printers and their corresponding sales team need to be part of that educating role. You know, they need to be they need to be up at the top of the funnel in a very, very different way, but it's so hard to do that. And like I said, when they're asked for something, they can, you know, how they respond is up to them as an organization. They can do that, but getting up into that top of the funnel and being part of the educational process, that they're relying on them. That's the tough stuff. I think that's the challenge, trying to get them to, don't you think?
I agree 100%. And it's one of the things I look for in a salesperson is a desire for lifelong learning. If you look at the most successful salespeople out there, at least in my estimation, and the ones I've been fortunate enough to work with, they're always working on themselves. And so it's, you know, constant reading, it's going to seminars, it's all these things so that, again, when they get in front of the client, they have something more to talk about.
Mm-hmm. How about,
and they're bringing that education to the client. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm you're exactly right. I'm wondering about, collectively though. I mean, it's, you know, a salesperson can only do so much, but there's another piece to this. And I know that, you know, we'll dive into the particulars around individual salespeople, but right. As an organization, they have to address this more as a brand, don't they?
I think that's a great observation. They really do. And I think if you look at a company's marketing and how they address their clients, and again, you want to be seen as the resource. And the way to be seen as a resource is to help educate. And again, to bring more to the table than they can find on their own out there in the internet is how you're going to come forward, mm-hmm. and rise above your competitors.
Right. Yeah, it's more difficult than ever before. And you know, and before I ask you specifically on some of these salespeople. So going back to the idea around, I'm kind of going back here in terms of the immediacy. How do you see the next generation? And this just kind of popped into my head because we were talking and I'm listening to you talk about, you know, responsiveness and as a collective organization. It's really, really a fascinating time. I don't know about you, and this just recently happened to me where I've texted someone or I've emailed them and they don't respond. I wonder if there is, we're conditioned to have that happen, but I've talked to people, business people who have said, oh, I've got 1,100 emails unread in my inbox. You know, there's a new generation that some people, they don't even check the text. I mean, I know you got it, but I'm wondering if you see it. So do you see any of those differences in with not only the tools, but I'm also worried about like your father. I mean, if you think about it, he would have run through a wall for his clients. And
right.
You know, I wonder if generationally we have some challenges as well.
You know, I think the not returning phone calls and the emails in the basket and all those things are not necessarily age specific. I'm helping with one of my clients with outbound messages and trying to get a new set of prospects to respond. And we're finding that you've got to have a touch at least 7 times before anybody responds. And so that might be phone calls, emails, direct mail pieces, whatever. We've got to touch them 7 times. And it's a small sample. It's about 1,000 people we're trying to reach. So I think the demands on everybody are quite great from a technology standpoint. Have been fortunate to have some millennial folks working with me, and I've asked them that question. I said, you know, when you get these emails marketing, what do you do with them? Or political emails or some of those things. And their answer was almost unanimous, and it was select all, delete.
Right.
That was interesting.
Right.
So maybe that's how, when particularly when your box gets full, you don't have time.
Yeah.
And so what that says to me is the message has gotta provide value. It's gotta give something. Gotta give the person a reason to open it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
and maybe, then even then it's tough.
Right. Well, and I and maybe it isn't. You're right on that. Maybe it isn't generational, because sometimes we poke, we point fingers. Obviously I just did it in terms of pointing the finger at generations, and yet we're all slaves to the text and the mobile and the immediacy of it all, of technology, and we are overwhelmed. But there's also, I wonder if there's a mindset that comes with that. You know, I saw it, but I'll get to it. Or, you know, we're getting so conditioned that there's so many messages coming at us that we simply can't deal with them all, and that's a yeah. tough thing. Which then, you
well,
know,
but how about?
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say it circles back to this need for personal touch.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Absolutely. And I think it's also, if you are familiar with the terms active pain and passive pain, you know, if my praying needs are fulfilled right now, even though it may not be all that great, and I may want to make a decision in the future for a change, I don't have active pain right now. In other words, you know, my printer's delivering on time, his price seems to be okay, whatever the derailers are. And so when I see those emails or those outbound touches, they take a lower priority for me.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if I was in active pain, I woke up this morning and I have to make a change. I have to find someone else. I think that's a different scenario. So maybe what you try and do is position yourself as the print provider to be number two. And those touches over time put your name on top of the pile, even though they may not be responding.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when the client or the prospect is in a mode of active pain, you're the first one they call.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And there's something to be said for, you know, not going for the Holy Grail. That goes to a different, you know, it kind of runs counter to the immediacy of our needs to say, listen,
right.
I've got to build a brand. I've got to build over time. Anything worthwhile takes time, and I want to invest in that. So yeah, I'll take number two and I'll build
right.
that relationship. You know, a lot of us aren't willing to do that because we have what we think are the bills to pay today. And we all want it now, and we've got this,
right.
We're a slave to ROI, and all of it is pushing us towards this. And I just had this conversation yesterday about there's no mystery to our lives anymore. And there was a day and age when you had a little mystery, you were just a little bit more compelling. And you know, that kind of falls.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It falls in line with all of this immediacy. So, it says that, listen, you got to have people who are, like you said, committed to lifelong learning, which over the course of time, it's the same way you develop relationships. I assume,
you bet.
Right?
You bet.
So
you bet. Well, and so I think, you know, there's a certain amount of people that say, oh, with all this technology, at some point we're not going to need salespeople. I don't think that's the case either. I think, still people buy from people they like and trust, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's a key component. Particularly in a custom business, a custom manufacturing business like printing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure there's people out there that would argue with me, but if you're selling paper clips, maybe not so much.
Right.
But, you know, the printing business is such that you're going to have issues. You're going to have varying different schedules and a person in the mix, your advocate within the printing company, is still a huge benefit, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I've said it many times on this podcast, within Canvas, you know, and whether I'm speaking, in fact, I'll speak next month, and I'll speak to this very, very thing. And that is that what you said, this goes to that the decision makers are harder than ever to get to, and
yeah.
they're more educated. You know, in the B2B world, 3/4 of the buying process is complete before human interaction takes place. And I just was
That's
talking
right.
to this guy. We rode a car together, or in a cab together, the other day, and we were talking about it. And about in our personal lives, we have transactions that, of course, we never have any human interaction. And the only time that you have human interaction is when you're ticked off, and there's a problem, and that's not what anybody wants. They want to have a de some depth to the relationship. And so, with that said, it's you need people who are able to get to the top of the funnel. You need organizations that are supposed to get there, because if they're just contacting you when they've already gone through that, then yeah, that's a commoditized, lack of value, if you will, in terms of, hey, what's your price, what's your availability, and none of us want to be there. And so this takes extraordinary people. It takes kind of getting out of the box, and I assume that's kind of what you've been working on lately, is how do we find the right people? What are those characteristics that get you to the top of the funnel?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in an economy like this, where we have very low unemployment, and there's a lack of available talent out there. And so, spend a lot of time talking with clients about developing their own talent, hiring the person with the right skills, maybe less experience, but the right skills and behaviors, and then working with those folks. And then the third component, really, there's a lot been written about it lately, but that's employee engagement, keeping them engaged in the company enough so that they'll stay. That has been one of the when the discussion turns to millennials, someone always brings up, oh, they want to change jobs every couple of years. Well, that's because they're not necessarily getting what they need out of this current situation. And so how can we as leaders engage them so that they don't want to leave? There's a, while we're on the subject, there was a recent Gallup poll that was very interesting I found, and it said 87% of employees worldwide are not engaged at work. 87%. That's a scary number.
That is
And
scary.
that their manager has at least 70% of the variance for employee engagement. So the management is key. However, companies with highly engaged employees outperform their competitors by 147%. So we ought to seek to hire the right people, develop the right people, and then keep them. Right. That's it's common sense, but I think that's what at least in my discussions, that's what most people are talking about these days. How can I find them, and how can I keep them?
Well, and so before, because I want to talk about, how we attract these people and develop them, and I want to talk about this coaching piece too, because that sounds like, a little bit where you and I have talked about this. Talked about hockey ad nauseum, but
That's right.
I look at it's a great analogy, right? I mean, today's world, you've got, and this happens in any youth sport or youth organization, where everybody has cocooned themselves, and we all are really parochial for our own kids, and it becomes team sports is there are individual endeavors. And you look at the pressing need for money and all this kind of stuff, and you wonder how much real coaching is going on, and nurturing. And sometimes, you might have to take a few losses in the beginning part of the season to truly develop them all. And I wonder if, switching that over to business and printing specifically, if that with the immediacy of the moment and the immediacy of our clients' needs, that we don't take the time to turn back to our employees and say, what's going on with you? And let's talk about how you fit into the world and how I can help. And your numbers are staggering. Is that, do you, are you feeling that?
I am, and in some cases living it. I have two millennials myself. They're both productive taxpayers these days, so that's wonderful. And they've turned out just wonderfully. But I talk with them a lot about it, and I also have hired several in the past. I think maybe it goes to the point of being more well-educated and more well-informed. They want to know why. And I think that helps them frame some of the things, but it's a fact going forward that we're going to have a culture in a company, a culture of employee engagement, if we expect to keep the good ones. Mm-hmm. You'll always be able to keep the C players, because they don't have as many options. But right. The A's are the ones you really want to keep. The A's. You've got to work hard to engage them. And so I think there's a lot of companies doing a lot with it now. It's obviously more difficult for a smaller company, although you don't have to spend a lot of money to do this. If you're getting employees involved, a sole proprietor can do it and make his people feel like they're part of the decision-making process, keep them informed, keep them moving forward with not always promotional opportunities, but opportunities to grow and learn. I think those are some of the key things that not just millennials, but most people are looking for these days. They want to be fulfilled at work, and then the last one really is a work-life balance, and that's sometimes a little more difficult to do, particularly in our industry with deadlines and so forth. But there are certainly things you can do and work on. But it comes back to the culture of the company, and is this one of our core values? Is that we're gonna engage our employees in an effort to help them grow and retain them?
Yeah, it's hard because we're in an industrial-aged industry and product-centric business. I think the best ones out there have really turned to being community-based or client-based. And that has dictated what assets or services that they provide, but still dominated by people who are putting ink on paper and need to have that machine running right now. And so I still think that it's probably tough for these guys to realize, listen, my long-term sustainability or relevancy is going to be based on the culture that I create. Right. I mean, you can start that today. I mean, you can get some people like yourself that come in and say, look, that's the other thing that I think that sometimes people, they think culture change. They think about all that, and it's almost more daunting to them than putting in a multi-million-dollar, 8-color press. And it's fascinating, right? And it's a smidgen of the cost, and yet that probably has a greater impact in the long term. So
I agree, but it's been hard to quantify in the past. How do you gauge what your people are looking for? An employee satisfaction survey, those are nice, but they don't necessarily tell you everything you want to know. So now there are tools that can help with that. And get some insight into what these folks are really looking for, because everybody's an individual. It's all going to be different, but some of the categories are the same with opportunities, keeping them involved in the business and up to date with what's going on. I've worked at places where company management didn't want to share any of the financials with the employees because they were afraid the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to be in my office asking for a raise. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I get that. You got to deal with that. But everybody wants to know that their job's secure, that they're part of a winning team. And you don't have to share everything, but you can have a culture of sharing some information that allows the people to feel like they're part of the mission and part of the success. It's difficult because Everybody's running lean. We don't have the extra employees, not that we ever really did, but we don't have the extra employees standing around in the wings. Everybody's got to pull their weight. But there are basic things you can do to engage your people so that they feel part. And if they feel part, you know, there's this whole related a topic of discretionary effort. And most people have heard about it, but it's really the difference between what you need to do as an employee just to get by versus what you're fully capable of. And so an engaged employee gives you more of that discretionary effort. And that's, isn't that what we want as employers? We want our people to be their best all the time. And, you know, in the past, we thought that's all up to them and not up to us. And I think it's a collaborative effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. I hear you, you know, you talk about running lean and you know, it's got to be interesting for you to kind of see, to step outside of it, right? You've been in these leadership roles and to see, be on the other side and go, oh my gosh, you know, I can see so much more so clearly now. And had I done this or whatever, I mean, every, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But I mean, do you, obviously that's a huge value when you're meeting with your clients because you've been in their shoes,
right?
And so I'm assuming you've had some real aha moments here as of late.
You know, yes, and you know, our backgrounds are similar, so I think. One of the things you gain in different experiences is there's a lot of different ways to accomplish things. Some are better than others. Some are brilliant. And you start looking for the brilliant things when you're kind of a free agent. So that's been the interesting part. And then I can bring that with me. But what's always interested me about printers in general is how inventive they are and how they're great problem solvers. Mm-hmm. And so with the last recession, I think it really put pressure certainly on the whole business. And we learned that you know, lean is the only way to go, not just a way to go. It's the only way to go. And so combined with how inventive printers are and how adaptive and problem solvers we all have to be. It's very interesting to see how we've risen to the challenge. You know, unfortunately those who haven't risen to the challenge aren't around anymore. And that's a difficult thing too, mm-hmm. but, the strong survive and, you know, aha wise, I think the leaders that I see are spending their efforts hiring the right people and making sure those people are in the right seats in the boat mm-hmm. so that they can maximize the productivity. I think that's where it's going. And that's from a manufacturing standpoint, a leadership standpoint, and a sales standpoint as well. Mm-hmm. You can't afford to have the C players anymore. You know, we all strive for A's, but the more A's you have, the better off you'll be. You'll be able to do more with less and that much more competitive.
Right. Right. Well, and like you said, they've got to nurture it. I mean, there could be someone who's pretty raw. Maybe they are out of the box, a C, but you can, you know, if you're committing yourself to developing them, you know, eventually they become an A. And I think that's great advice. Let me ask you, so some fairly basic stuff as you're working with the Harrison and you're working with your clients.
Yes.
Can you, and maybe you can give us a couple little nuggets of wisdom here around how these companies, you know, the things they should be doing to attract new clients and keep them and beyond, you know, obviously that you're trying to set the culture, but what are some of the nuggets that you would give them to do that?
Great question. Almost universally, they're looking for the right fit. And so sometimes the top candidate isn't necessarily the right fit for the culture of the company. And so when you think of fit, are they looking for the same things that we provide as a company? The alternative is, you know, if I want them bad enough, am I going to change for them? Mm-hmm. So fit is number one. I think the enlightened people are looking for the lifelong learners. Mm-hmm. They're looking for people that play well together as a team. And so, you know, both your kids are in team sports. I think they're learning at an early age how to be a member of a team. And I think that's critical today, mm-hmm. no matter what industry you're in. Certainly, you know, printing's the ultimate team sport, if you think about it, and what has to happen to build throughout. So, right fit, member of a team, lifelong learner, open to coaching. Mm. Are they willing to be coached? And that sounds easy, but there are some people that say, I like me as I am, I'm not changing. Mm-hmm. Is that someone you want on your team if you're trying to grow that team? Right. And then openness to change, because the other, you know, the other thing that's been constant in our industry, in a good way, is that, you know, you could make the argument we've changed more than most industries out there with regard to technology and how we run our businesses and everything that goes with the business. Adaptability to change, mm-hmm. is key.
Yeah.
I would say those are the handful that people are looking for right now.
It's pretty compelling stuff. I believe that and maybe more difficult than ever, because of all the stuff we talked about before and the way the world has so changed. I mean, we've certainly dwelled on the fact that there's immediate gratification or we're fighting that. But, right. You know, we've also live in this world. I've talked a lot about this as well, and that is that safety is a big concern. And mm-hmm. so everything that we've ever done, you know, we're cocooned. You know, I've used that word a lot, and it's because you see people who are just kind of burying themselves within the confines of their most secure environments, and you know, people don't want to stick their head out too much anymore. I mean, it's crazy how we communicate technologically, and but yet we're really not out there putting ourselves in harm's way, if you will. And right. You know, we also, when you've got that kind of stuff married with the immediacy of the moment, and you've got the boss who wants the ROI immediately, right now, you've got employees who don't want to stick their neck out. You know, they hide under their desk, so to speak. And so you've got this culture that is driving us all to our own little worlds. And I worry about kids and generations growing up not being able to, you know, we can talk about the social part of it, but there's also, they don't get to fall down and skin their knees, so to speak. You know, they don't have the trials and tribulations, and you know, you can see the kids who have been knocked down a peg and keep mm-hmm. going, and mm-hmm. they're better. I mean, they're stronger. Yep. And you see those others who have been bubble wrapped since they were born that have never seen adversity. You know, we talk about lawnmower parenting, and so that's fascinating to hear you talk about, you know, have they ever operated in a team? Doesn't mean that, you know, it was all blissful, but understanding the dynamics of other people matter too, and everybody's got their own.
Right.
And then this open to coaching, you're right? They come from worlds where they've been told they're fabulous and they've been called sweetie pie, and now the boss doesn't
snowflake,
you know. Right.
So well, and so but again, that's why I like sports, is because you if we don't get to the participation trophy stage, let's forget that whole thing. But you learn how to lose gracefully. You're not always going to win. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think you learn more from losing than winning. And that's in business and otherwise. So I think, you know, we need to look for people that are willing to, and we need to provide an environment for them where they're not going to get their head chopped off if they take a calculated risk and fail. You know, that's easy for me to say, but I think if you want them to grow, you've got to give them opportunities to fail. And so, you know, the look at the most successful companies out there, pick any one, that's their culture. Apple computer, Apple, you know, and all their success under Steve Jobs. And afterwards, he's written a lot about, you know, hire the best people you can find and get out of their way, basically. So, I think I'm concerned about the same things, in that, you know, we've protected our kids so much that they may not be able to get up after they fall down. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the biggest concern. But then again, we as employers have to coach them through that.
Yeah.
I'd like to know that coming in. That's why I like some of the data out there, but you know, about a given person, but, give me somebody that's got the attitude and is willing to be coached, and I can work with them.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I mean, that, you know, giving them the opportunity to fail, letting them know that it's okay to stick their head out, that is part of that coaching and you know, and culture. So, I mean, that's all amazing stuff. So, I want to ask you specifically about the Harrison, so I'm not going to let you go before I do that. But, but let me ask you, where do people go? Where should we all go to find high-performing salespeople?
That's another great question. What I like these days is there's a lot of universities that have developed professional selling programs. You know, when I was in school, you got one selling class as part of your marketing degree, and that was it. Now, universities here in Georgia, Kennesaw State, one of the top in the country. University of Alabama has a professional selling program. There are umpteen of them. So there's a great opportunity to find people that have had real life experience, although it's in school, but they're coming out of there wanting to be salespeople. That's mm-hmm. that's number one. I'm involved at Clemson University, and while they have a basic course and they're working on more, finding kids out of those graphic arts programs across the country. They have the print background with the right attitude, and I've had success with those young people in coaching them into sales. Folks, they have a great capacity for output, and they're not afraid of anything. So you can really work with them, and it's fun to work with them. I think the days, Mark, of you know, we used to go out there and hire our competitors, salespeople,
right.
And they would bring, we can debate about the quality. They would bring 75% of their book of business with them, and it would be an immediate start. I don't think that happens anymore.
No.
It may be in an isolated case, but the risk is there for the print buyer. They're not necessarily going to change just because the salesperson changes. And so I think if you get 25%, you're lucky.
Right.
And so I think we've got to look as an industry saying, we've got to grow our own, and it's not going to be immediate. It's going to take us some time. If we hire the right person and coach them through the way we want them to sell in our system, I think that's a better solution. It's not without cost or risk.
Yeah.
But I think you have to find those right people. They may be selling something else. They may be a good salesperson in another industry, and we've got to teach them printing or our way of doing it. But I think the days of hiring the competitor salespeople are fast coming to an end.
Well, and
being successful at it, right?
Right. And you know, that goes back to the culture. and monitoring your employees' engagement, because if that's all part of it, then you collectively as a team, as a company, as a brand, have a relationship with the client as opposed to just one singular contact point in a salesperson. And that if you've got that relationship, if managers and executives are connected with the client, if the customer service, if every part of the organization is connected and there's an overall relationship with the brand, if the salesperson leaves, that was always the thing, right? That was always the big threat. It was always the big threat, and it spoke to being very, very product driven. That if the company was going to be product driven, then yeah, their relationship with the clients was all based on a salesperson. But if you're client based, if you're market based, your whole organization is built around these different clients. That if one part of your business leaves, whether it's a salesperson or an internal person, it shouldn't cost the relationship.
Well, and conversely, it makes it even harder on the salesperson that's trying to come in and grab that work because, you know, we talked about it earlier in the call, is that the purchasing person, whoever that is, marketing, whoever it is, has got so much on their plate. They have an inbox that's got 1,000 emails in it. And to change without a compelling reason just doesn't make any sense for them. It's too hard. It takes a lot of their time. They just can't spend the time to change vendors like that. And so the opposite side of it, the salesperson has to have a compelling argument. If you're the incumbent, it's a lot, and everyone knows this, it's a lot easier to keep a client than to go get a new one.
Yeah.
And so you've got to set up your culture and your systems to keep those clients once you land them.
Yeah.
But all that goes to say, I think you have to grow your own salespeople these days, and finding the right person to plug in with the right attitude, we can teach them the rest. That's my belief.
Yeah, and so let's do this. So I want you to tell them a little bit about what it is you do, the Harrison.
Yeah.
I want to let people know that Bill has graciously agreed to write some columns for us, because this stuff is, in my opinion, is the most compelling content we've got. And this conversation, I love this thing. I mean, I'm sitting here taking, robust notes here because I'm not kidding you.
Well,
I mean,
thank you, Mark. Thank
I've been
you. No,
I've been writing the whole time because it's like, this is good for me. I don't know if anybody's listening or not, but it is good and it is thoughtful and it is so hopeful, and I think that's hopefully what, that's probably what you're doing with your clients, is that you listen, bringing some thought, some data to it all.
Yes.
You've not only do you have the history, but Harrison has dug into this and says, look, this stuff works, and it might seem analytical, but it's the building blocks for building this beautiful culture that will be so engaging with not only your employees, but your marketplace. So speak to some of the things that the Harrison does. I know you talk around fit,
sure,
but also even measuring employees' engagement, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, Harrison's been around for about 30 years, and the man who developed it is a industrial psychologist and a mathematician. I think he's probably the ultimate geek. His last name's Harrison. But he's and his team have found ways to take this data from a 30-minute assessment. You get online. Mark, I think you've actually taken it. You get online. It takes you about 30 minutes. And from that data that we get from you, we can use predictive analytics to determine your behavioral preferences. So the main thing that's different about Harrison, there's a couple things, but the main one is that it's behaviors, not personality. Some of the other assessments work with personality and try and fit you in a box, And if you study it, you know that you know your personality is not going to change after a young age, 6 or 7. But behaviors you can change at any time if you want to. And so determining your behavioral preferences, what you enjoy doing, and how does it fit with the person we're trying to hire, and then after we hire, develop, promote, engage, retain. How can we do that with the data that's been provided? And we can do that all from one assessment. So it also, in a report called The Paradox, it predicts how you will behave under stress. Hmm. In 12 areas, really the way to do it is experience it. Not so much we talk about it, but we can predict how you're going to behave under stress. And that's important if you think about sales and rejection and all the negative things or the tougher things that go with sales. Can we predict how this person's going to bounce back and recover? Are they going to bounce back and recover? Or are they going to sit at home and not make any more sales calls? We'd like to know that up front.
Right.
And so the overarching reason for me working with this is that we run our businesses in an analytical way. If you think about the data we collect from our manufacturing operations and even sales data, how we're, you know, how many leads, how we're converting those leads, what our sales were this quarter versus last, and down to the people side, individual salespeople. But we really don't use data to hire, develop, and retain people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a huge missed opportunity because it's what, depending on your business, it's the number two expense in your total business is the people side. So using data and predictive analytics to make it as foolproof as possible to hire and develop folks. That's really what we're going for.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's why would you, you know, frivolously do anything that is clearly your connection to the marketplace? And you know, these organizations have to define themselves by the market and not longer by their assets. And so, you know, spending a little time and diving into this makes a lot of sense. Give us the how can people find you and dive into some of this stuff?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me there. Best place is just to call me. And I'll give you my number. It's 678-575-6306. Mm-hmm. I'm about ready to launch a website. I don't have it out there yet. But it's within a month away, and you'll see me on the internet as well.
Awesome. So, excellent. Well, Bill, I think this has been great. I can't thank you enough. And I really do believe in this I just feel like it's critically important. You know, we have a lot of people in this industry, as you know, who are nervous and they've we've lived nervously for quite a while. And the ones that can be comfortable being uncomfortable are the ones who are doing okay. And they're making things happen and they're stepping out. And part of that is that they've addressed the sales side of their business and realize that is so critical, and the culture is paramount to their success. So, you know, I think what you're doing.
Well, thank you. The margins are so thin today that, you know, you could argue that a bad decision is more costly than ever. And so why wouldn't you narrow the odds? Right. On one of the biggest expenses on your balance sheet, which is the people side.
Right, right. Well, listen, I appreciate it. You and I are going to be talking. I can't wait to share some of your insight within Canvas and the printed edition. I think that's going to be great. And We're going to cross paths here. We'll probably at some point have to take in a hockey game together.
Exactly. Hey, I'm always open for a Pens game. I can get up there pretty quickly.
So. I got to tell you, my buddies and I, so I got a buddy who's got a milestone birthday next year, and he said, hit my bucket list, and I said, I'm in. And we're talking about going up to one of those pond hockey tournaments.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Up in Wisconsin. And
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be great. Wanted to do it. So bucket list. We're gonna sign up and a bunch of old farts, skate around out there, and I'm sure there'll be a cocktail or two, but
nothing's better than that.
Yeah.
So my daughter lives in Nashville, and so we're going to a game next weekend, I guess, up there to see I forget even who they're playing. Maybe they're playing the Avalanche, but she's with a law firm that is tied to the Predators. So she's got opportunity, and Atlanta can't keep a team, but Nashville's setting records for attendance.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate it. We'll be in touch, and
Thanks, Mark. I just can't
thank you enough for doing this.
I appreciate the invitation. It was great, and I enjoyed talking to you. Talk to you soon.
All right, Bill. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye. Mm.
Bye now.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Bill Blair. I think that you would have found that pretty enlightening. I think he taps into some of the cool new ideas around how companies should be engaging on the sales side. It's clear that the world has changed, that decision makers are tougher to reach, that they're more informed, that our addiction to immediate gratification plays a role in that. And so we need help. And someone like Bill and the Harrison Group can really, really give you the insight and knowledge to not only find the right salespeople, but also how to create the best cultural engagement. So I just can't thank Bill enough for taking the time. I'm really, really excited that he has decided to write some columns for us this year. I think that you'll all enjoy that in the print version of Canvas. So my thanks to him. My thanks to you for listening. A reminder that today's episode was brought to you by my friends at Convertible Solutions and their brand new diamond print glitter paper. It is the world's first full line of printing glitter paper and film that can be used for a wide range of printing and converting projects. It is some cool stuff, and I encourage you once again to call 866-832-0217. Ask them for a swatch book. Ask them to learn more about diamond print glitter. So until next time with our next guest, this has been Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. I'm Mark Potter. I can't thank you enough for listening. And as a reminder to all of you, be the buffalo. Take care.